and welcome to another episode of Fool's Daily. I'm joined again by Matt Anderson.
Hi, everyone.
And today we're going to talk about how Fool Schematic actually plays. We've touched on it for the past couple of days. We've touched on the fact that it's a digital RPG, very similar to other JRPGs that you might have seen. But there's also a card game aspect, and I have no idea how it works. I'm thinking, oh, is it like that Disney thing where you have to collect the toys and then scan them? So, Matt, over to you to explain how you merge a card game and an RPG together. Yeah,
absolutely. I think we've come up with something that's really unique. I mean, the RPG itself, both properties are full of kind of an enormous amount of innovations, perhaps too many, you know. There's a saying that, like, 70% familiar is kind of a good place to be. I think we're pushing that boundary a bit. But I'll speak to kind of how the two work together first before I address each individually. One thing that was enormously important to us is we wanted these two properties to interact, but we didn't want anyone to feel like their interaction was a gimmick or, worse yet, something that they had to engage with if it was going to force them to do something, engage with one of them that they didn't want to. You know, like many, many people just want a great cooperative card game and they don't want to mess with a phone RPG. So, you know, we didn't want to put people in a place where they felt shoehorned into either space. So instead we were like, okay, what are some cool interactions we can do that people are going to enjoy that are entirely optional? And most importantly, how can we make the mechanics fit the theme, which is really critical to this entire project? And the way that works for us is that if you are playing the card game, and the card game is a cooperative card game sitting up to four players at this point, and once again, a lot of these numbers are kind of floating. And I'll say right out front too that I am not the lead designer on the card game. That's a dude named David Hanold, who's a total prince and a genius. He'll have to speak more to this later, but the card game, the way it works is that you will have a frame card, which is effectively like a hero card. And you'll be summoning rigs into combat, which are kind of like your minions. They're like machines that are built and automated, but not actually a person. And you will be fighting against a glitch personality. And the glitch deck, which can be fought solo or, once again, up to four players, will automate through four phases of the glitch, and it's got some very cool kind of like self-playing mechanics that we're very proud of. The way the RPG works with that is that your frame card has a set of rules. If you like, you can take your phone and you can scan that card. And the way it will work is that when you open up the digital RPG, you'll have a little login interface that will bring up, over a portion of it, just your phone's camera. If you just set your phone over the card, it will pick up a little code that is on the card, and then your phone will instantly show a new copy of that card that represents your digital character logged into that frame. And what is now represented is kind of a union of your digital stats and your card stats. So you're going to get a new set of rules on that card. You then just simply set your phone down on top of that card, and now your phone is a digital card in the card game. So
right, okay.
None of that is required at all to enjoy the card game, but it gives you alternate rules to play with and a different set of powers. So it's an expansion on the game itself. Likewise, whenever you do that process, when you take a digital character and log it into the card, part of that frame stats are reflected back onto your character. So you can tweak your character in small ways in the digital game, depending on which frame you last logged into. And That's the very basic handshake between the two. There are narrative handshakes as well, but they all kind of revolve around this basic scanning technology. The scanning itself is really quick and painless. We wanted to stay away from terms like augmented reality and the rest, because you're not going to be like, you know, moving your phone around in space and, you know, trying to keep it locked on a card, and there's not a lot of pickup or anything. It's literally you just hold your phone over a card for half a second, you'll get a green light, you press a button and set it down. It's a very fast, kind of painless process. So that's the interaction between the two. We have a few more interactions that we're also very excited about, but we can't quite talk about yet because we're working out the technology involved. That's kind of the nature of video game development, right? However, the one thing we are absolutely aware of and keeping at the forefront of our ideology is that we do not want this to be a gimmick, and we do not want to force people to use this interactivity if they don't want to. So this is simply added functionality for anyone who would like to engage it.
Okay, so if you play a game with the cards with your mates down your local gaming club or whatever, mm-hmm. does that feed back into your interactions within the digital game?
It can. That's something that we're exploring right now. One thing that we are going to ask players to engage with and kind of join in the suspension of disbelief. It's actually, this is a really interesting kind of philosophical or just kind of, I guess, habit difference between physical and video game players, you know, is that physical people who play tabletop are used to enforcing rules themselves to enjoy the products that they like, you know, like, yep. you don't have to tell a board gamer that cheating will ruin their fun of the game, right? Yes. Video gamers are habituated into anything they can get away with is, you know, completely fair game. If I can figure out a way to do it within the system, it was intended and it should happen. So we want to do some fun crossovers like that, but obviously it would be clunky and probably near impossible to enforce people's results in a tabletop card game into the digital RPG. Like, there's no way we can tell if you cheated in a physical yeah. card game, right? So one thing we're going to try is just ask players to engage in that, you know, like literally ask them, hey, fight the glitch. Did you win against the glitch? Yes or no? You know, and it'll be up to them to just decide if they want to cheat that experience for themselves or not. The degree to which we put in that kind of interaction is going to be based on a lot of kind of playtesting and just feedback that we haven't quite got yet. So it's going to show up in some form, that reflection, but to which degree and exactly how, I couldn't say right this minute.
Okay, cool. So then if we move on to the RPG itself,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the big question, I suppose, is what platforms are you going to be on?
The platforms, so the RPG is definitely slotted for iOS and Android, which is kind of an interesting choice because that particular environment is a bit of a shark tank, you know. There's an enormous amount of properties there that we personally feel we don't agree with our monetization tactics. We think they're predatory, you know. The freemium space is pretty brutal.
Yep.
We're doing some things to try and stave that off. For instance, the way we're monetizing the game is, this is, I think it's brilliant, but it's also quite possibly insane. We are doing a system that we coined called free to pay what you want, which means that all of our purchases in the game, our game is going to be free, and all the purchases in the game are going to kind of work like the Humble Indie Bundle, if you're familiar with that at all.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So you will be able to pay what you want for our in-game product, and people who pay above the average will throw something else that's cool in. But it'll be a very open system that definitely puts the pressure on us to create cool things that people want to buy. We don't want to create a game that tries to kind of bore or annoy people into paying us. That's just not a system we want to engage with. So,
you're not going to go down the dungeon keeper route.
No, we certainly aren't.
Thank God for that.
I'll tell you what, dude. We studied that in depth. We've studied, you know, I don't know. We've played so many freemium games over the past year that, you know, our eyes are glued with them, or yeah, whatever. But the thing is that we're very philosophically passionate about making products that we feel have integrity, and in a way it is going to be an experiment, but it's something that we can keep our heads held high about. So we're going to make stuff that we honestly believe people will want to pay for, you know, and if people don't want to pay for it, that's our problem. You know, we're not going to try and bully them into it. We're going to try and make cooler stuff. So anyways, that's a giant kind of tangent from your original point, but iOS, Android are the platforms for sure. We're building this whole game in Unity, which gives us really the ability to publish it anywhere. We can go to PC, we can go to consoles, we can do anything we like, but we want to make sure it makes sense. So we haven't committed to anything else, but everything is on the table at this point.
Cool. I as a owner of many iOS devices, that will be perfect for me.
That's wonderful.
So we've got a true RPG? Is it a true RPG? So people who have played things like Final Fantasy and things like that will recognize the tropes, etc., and the mechanisms within that, or is it a take on a JRPG with more Western influence?
Actually, I mean it's quite different in a few ways. We are giving kind of more similar to Western RPGs. We are having a silent protagonist that the character can customize. So, you know, we don't necessarily have like a Cloud or a Squall, you know, kind of like a Chrono, like a leading character that you can identify with closely, but we will have rich narratives. And I guess I should address the differences, which are pretty key. We hate virtual joysticks, anything of that sort. So we have kind of a first person navigation system that's a bit adventure gamey, where you click on certain locations to engage with people or shop or enter dungeons and the rest. Okay. Everything is very fast and touch oriented. So our interface is designed with a philosophy of speed. Like if you're at a bus stop and you want to get into a dungeon, we want to put you in that dungeon in 30 seconds. So you're not going to be walking around. You're going to be like three clicks from anything you want to do in this entire game. That said, though, you will be progressing through an evolving narrative. You will be going through dungeons. You'll be fighting bosses. You'll be getting spells. You'll be getting units. Our unit system is kind of fun in that we have units called subroutines, and you assemble them into parties, which are like programs. You can have three parties active at any point, and what these subroutines do is really pretty specific. So you kind of have to tailor these parties to take down certain threats. So if you're entering a dungeon and you know, like, oh, these like four or five different types of enemies appear in there, you've got to kind of try and assemble like a few different parties that can address each of these threats. And then before every combat, you decide which of those parties is going to fight against that particular target. So it's very kind of like front loaded in that sense. I guess if you compared it to a card game, there's a bit of deck building in it that's a big part of the gameplay. I'm trying to think of the most direct comparison I could make. I'd want to almost say like there's a little bit of Kingdom of Loathing in there, if you've ever tried that.
No, I haven't. But the fact that it's first person makes me happy.
Yeah. Now, I should specify, too, it's first person, but it's not like a first person move around. It's like a first person where you almost like a Professor Layton or a Phoenix, right? Where you
right.
visit the location and interact with certain things in it. But there's not like, okay. Yeah, you got it.
Okay. No. I mean, I've been playing, revisiting Knights of the Old Republic on the iPad because they've just re-released it.
Oh yeah.
And the one thing that is driving me mad is moving my character around the corridors. Everything else is brilliant, but the touch interface that they've used for moving your character around just doesn't work.
Just totally brutal.
Oh, it's horrible. Oh, but because it's Knights of the Old Republic, and I love Knights of the Old Republic, I am persevering with it at the moment.
I'll tell you what, I'm right there with you. KOTOR is a brilliant title. Totally, totally loved it. And I'll have to check it out on iOS. But
yeah, no, I mean it's a perfect port. It really is. Yeah.
Very, so, very. No, true.
The movement is a pain. Oh, so, yeah. You're taking this to Kickstarter.
We are
on Tuesday.
Say again, sorry. On Tuesday. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, on Tuesday. Why Kickstarter? What do you see? I asked this question when I was speaking with the Gilboa guys a few weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you going to Kickstarter? I mean, especially considering Weird's involvement and Weird's a successful company in their own in the game space and have published other games, etc.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. What do you think that Kickstarter is going to do for you?
No, that's a wonderful question actually. And it's an important point. The IP is actually owned by Drawn by Clouds. And Weird is a wonderful partner for us, and they are producing the majority of the card game. But Drawn by Clouds is certainly a startup, and we've been blessed with some good solid capital, and it's carried us far, and it will continue to carry us a bit. But Kickstarter is certainly a necessity to realize the full vision, especially the digital side that we'd like to. You know, I mean, like any digital. Or I guess like any product, there are various kind of targets for what it can be when it's finally released. And we see this as the best opportunity to release the very best vision that we have of this product later this year. So it's certainly not, you know, Kickstarter comes with a lot of positive and negatives. I mean, because you put an enormous onus of pressure on yourself, you know. I mean, when you make those commitments, you don't want to slip up, you don't want to do anything wrong. So it's something that we probably wouldn't be engaging with if we didn't see it as something that really was necessary to the ultimate vision of what we want to create. But that said, there are a lot of positives there, in that it's. Besides just being crowdfunding, you know, it's a good opportunity to engage with people and get people to see the product and give people who are early adopters and want to give us a try some very cool stuff as kind of like a nice thank you. And as you know, like you said, we haven't done an enormous amount of marketing up to this point, so this is kind of like our debut to the world. So it's, you know, it's a necessary thing for quite a few reasons. It was a strategic choice with a lot of thought put into it. The other thing I'd say is that, once again, it is like a kind of a startup spawn. I'm a co-owner of DBC. Eric Johns is as well. So it's, you know, it's not... it's certainly not a marketing stunt or anything like that. We are crowdfunding for... you know, the reasons that you crowdfund for.
Right. So it's interesting because obviously, I mean, there's a big debate, certainly amongst the gaming community around mm-hmm. Kickstarter and the fact that certain companies, who we won't mention, effectively use Kickstarter as a pre-sale methodology.
That's very true. That's not even a discussion. That's a fact. You know, like you just go on there right now and it's like, wait a moment, that's done. Like that product, you're showing it to me, it's done. You know, so... that certainly is true.
Fact that you're a true startup and having done startups for the past 11 years, I know how that feels. So
you and me, you know, it's absolutely the case. So I'm not saying that like a failed Kickstarter would preclude us getting something out. I mean, we have certainly got a done a ton of assets just to get it to the point where we feel like it's, you know, presentable. But by the same token, you know, we have the talent assembled to create something extraordinarily special, and we really do need this leg up to get us that final, like, 30% that's going to make this truly magical. So,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, we're well over time, but it was worth running over time because that was great. Hey, so,
okay.
Thank you very much for coming on the show, Matt.
I appreciate it. It was a pleasure.
And I wish you every luck with the Kickstarter.
Thank you.
And perhaps after it's done, and you know you're luxuriating in your gold plated bathtub. We can come back on the show again and talk about how the whole Kickstarter experience went for you.
I would love that. That would be a real pleasure. Thoroughly enjoyed myself, Mike.
Brilliant. So for the final time, I've been Mike.
I've been Matt.
Bye-bye. You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're at fools_daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.